Very good. So, just for the sake of the recording, because many of you are coughing, so let's get all the coughing out of the way, first of all. Come on, communal coughing. Very good. Now we're done with it. Unfortunately, you can't control coughing that way. But yesterday I did say that, there is a means where you've got like a runny nose, or you've got an ache or a pain, or you can't sleep at night, how you can use these basic teachings of meditation to really assist you. And that this is important because it also starts to teach you how to let go, what kindness, what compassion is. Because letting go is the key to meditation, the key to a peaceful life. And I said yesterday, you realize everything is out of control anyway. So what are we trying to control it for? Get frustrated. We just learn to go with the flow, to surf the waves of life, and to go with the sneeze, and to off with the cough. Which means you should wheeze with the sneeze. I'll give you something to actually survive sneeze with. In other words, we don't tend to resist, we go with, we relax, and everything becomes surprisingly much better. We think if we don't do anything about it, it will get worse. But even to quote Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh, who once said, "Don't just do something, sit there." Which is, I like those things which put things the other way around. Because a lot of the time when we do stuff, it makes it worse. But how do we let things go? How do we let it be when we're dying? When everything is going haywire? When everything is going wrong? How can we just leave it alone and let it be? Training. That's how we do it. And this is not just Ajahn Brahm. There is Ajahn Chah's successor, is this monk called Ajahn Liam. Really, I was always impressed with him. And when I went to see him many years ago, Ajahn Chakra had already left, so I was taking over. And so I needed some advice, on how to be an abbot. Now, when we look at nuns who are going to be abbots, sometimes say, "Abbot, that's a male word. Shouldn't it be abbess?" But we started that in Dharamsala with the first nuns there, and instead of calling them abbess, they started calling them abyss. And so, no, that's too close to a derogatory word. Even calling them ayah. Because there was one nun, none of our nuns here, but somewhere else, and her nickname was Ayatollah. So you've got to be careful with names. I won't tell you who that was, but I think a few people, you just told her what it was. So we've got to be very careful with stuff with names. So we learn how to let things be. So with Ajahn Liam, I went to go and see him. And it's like, it was a custom, it's almost like an introduction, like, "How are you today?" That's what we say, over in the West. But, in Asian countries, especially Thailand and Laos, they don't ask how are you, instead, "Where are you going?" "Pai nai." That was just a greeting. And when I heard that, I thought, "None of your business where I'm going. I'm a free agent. What's that to do with you?" And it was just like, "How are you?" And it was just a term of greeting. That's all. And so, the term of greeting for abbots was usually, "How are your monks? Are they easy to train?" So that's why I asked him. I said, "How are your disciples over here in Wat Pa Phuong? Are they easy to train?" "Oh, yeah, really easy." I say, "Hang on." Because there's always problems and troubles and difficulties and stuff. "But what do you mean they're easy to train?" Well, he said, when they want to go that way, I let them go that way. When they want to go this way, I let them go this way. That's why they're very easy to train. Now that is not sort of a shallow monk. You know, that is a very, very great monk. So sometimes when we make these sayings, we think, my goodness, that is just being irresponsible. But no, he's got huge amounts of respect. So that's with my mind. My mind wants to go this way, off you go. Wants to go that way, off you go. That's called letting go. Have you got the trust and the courage to do that? So we have to learn how to let things go. Things go much better that way. So, with learning what this letting go and this very deep responsibility, because it's responsibility understanding the nature of this world, the body and the mind, and how it works and how to deal with it. So, example number one, many, many, many years ago, in the jungles of Northeast Thailand, when there was no mobile phones, there wasn't even stationary phones, there were no phones, there was no electricity, there was no road, it was just dirt roads everywhere, there was nothing. And so, when you were in trouble, when you were ill or sick, there was no one to run to, no one to call, no doctors or nurses available. You had to rely on the Dhamma. So one evening, I started to have a toothache. And I don't know what it is about toothaches, but at night time, they get worse. The same over here, even though, you know, you have telephones, it usually gets more. Whatever sickness you've got gets worse on the long weekends when there's no doctor around. So, it's late at night, and I had this terrible toothache. And I heard afterwards that sometimes a toothache can drive you crazy. That is why people actually, if they want to torture you, to find out the truth. So this, I'm just giving some information, preparation for those coming on the interviews later on today. To find out what you're really doing. Sometimes they take your teeth out, pull your teeth out. They really torture. So I had this big, sort of torturing toothache. Just trying to get rid of people so I don't get too many interviews. But you know, you've been here, you know I'm not like that. At least people don't tell. Otherwise, okay. So. There they were, and my teeth were really hurting. And you tried everything you knew to try and get rid of it. There was no aspirin or Panadol or painkillers in the medicine. There wasn't no medicine cabinet. It was just, you know, out in the jungle. And so what do you try and do? Meditate. I'm stronger than the pain. Sit there. I'm not going to move. I'm stronger than that. That's about 2 minutes. I just gave in because it was driving me crazy. So, then I started walking meditation. And I started walking. I had to stop walking meditation. Do you know what I was doing? Running meditation. When you're really desperate, it's just, you have to do things fast, you know, just running. You know, just crazy stuff. So the next thing I tried was chanting. I already told you a bit of chanting. Just, if you want to know how effective our chanting is, go and have a look in the chanting book in Vajrayana Monastery. The same names come up every week. So it's not really working, is it? But we do it anyway. It just gives people a boost. It shows that we care. Sort of. So, there we go. I decided, are you so desperate you try anything? You know, it was only a couple of years previously I was in Cambridge, you know, poo-pooing all that sort of stuff. You know, all that supernatural mumbo-jumbo. But when you're desperate, you'll try anything. So I was chanting. Chanting every every sutta I knew to try and get rid of this terrible pain. And that's when I had to stop that as well. Because again, when you're really desperate in great pain, you can't chant softly. I was shouting the chants! I was in agony! And it's about 2 o'clock in the morning, I was going to wake everyone up. Maybe 1 o'clock. And so I had to give that up. And so these are those wonderful moments in life. When your back's against the wall. Well, Ajahn Chah used to say, you can't go forward, you can't go back, and you can't stand still. You're really in difficulties. You can't stand it any longer. Ah, what am I going to do? And that's when you remember, let it be. Let go of controlling things, just leave it alone. If you can't beat them, join them. So that means I let go. And because I had to, because there was no other choice, because, you know, it was intolerable, so you had to let go. And my goodness, that was one of the first times I realized its power. 1 second, you're in agony, just trying every trick in the book, everything you knew, going through your whole inventory, and nothing works. And then you remember, just let go. And it worked. And one of the first amazing experiences, just as soon as you let go, the pain stopped, vanished. And in its place was this beautiful sense of peace, freedom. Couldn't believe it. You know, 1 second you're in agony, the next minute you're happy, peaceful. Because you had to really let go. And so, 1:30 in the morning, went to go and meditate for an hour, just so easy. And then usually get up at 3 o'clock, so I decided to just go lay down for half an hour now. Lay down, really nice, deep sleep for only an hour, and then the bell rang, and then I woke up, had a toothache. Only a slight one though. But it was amazing, just the power of letting go. When you really have to. So, how can you train like that? You don't need to have a bad toothache. Actually, the other toothache story, you can check this out because he's still over there on the other side of the road, Amandus's story. Because even when we came here, still it's hard to get an appointment for the dentist over here. You ring up for the dentist, oh, we're free sometime next week. And then you're in agony. It's too late. I'm sorry, we're full of appointments. And you've got to go up there anyway, and you go up there and they're sick and you have to go home again and make another appointment. Oh, it's so difficult. And anyway, I'm a bit afraid of going to the dentist. And the reason why, it's fair enough fear, because many years ago, my dentist, he had to take out a tooth because it was split and there was no way he could repair it. So he took it out, and then afterwards, he confessed to me, instead of throwing it away, he kept it. He kept it in the hope that if Ajahn Brahm gets really, really famous, it can be a relic and worth a lot of money. Look at that Buddha's tooth relic over in Singapore. I mean, just how many millions and millions and millions of Singapore dollars does that make? So you're not really at that level, but you know, who knows, that people got a lot of faith and so you know, my tooth. You know what happened? He moved surgeries and moved offices and he lost it. And that's when he confessed. So because he lost, he hasn't got one now. I just really worried that one day I go there and he doesn't really need to take it out. He takes it out to an insurance, like a pension fund for when he retires. But no, I'm only joking. He's a good dentist. So anyway, he wouldn't do that. But he laughs when I say that story as well. But anyway, so Amandus, he doesn't even go to the dentist. Because I was going to the workshop one morning in Bodhinyana Monastery, and he was coming the opposite direction. Because I was a building monkey in those days. He was coming the opposite direction. And he had a pair of pliers. And in the pliers was a tooth with all blood on it. So what do? He said, I pulled out my tooth. Just too much hassle. It cost a lot of money going to the dentist. You got all these injections, sit on the floor, pulling all these forms, and put this thing in your ass. all the time, really uncomfortable. So I said, oh, just quickly, just do it myself. Self-help. And I said, that's amazing. How can you do that? How can you pull out your own tooth? And what he said, I've repeated this many times, this is Dhamma. This is to see how we can let go of the future, let go of the past. He said, when I decided, too much bother to go to the dentist, make an appointment, that didn't hurt. When I walked to the workshop with the intention of pulling out my own tooth, does that hurt, walking? You try it. Walk to the workshop. That doesn't hurt, does it? And then, when I opened the door and walked inside, that didn't hurt. But I picked up the pliers. That didn't hurt. Try picking up a pair of pliers, that doesn't hurt at all. When I put the pliers on my tooth, that never hurt. When I wiggled it, oh, that hurt. But only for 3 seconds, 4 seconds. And then it sort of hurt afterwards, but not that much. Just 3 or 4 seconds. But for many people, you would start hurting. Even when I started telling the story, even though it wasn't your tooth. You can see how we project on fear, anxiety. Ooh, this is going to hurt. Ooh, this is going to hurt. Ooh, this is going to hurt. We make that pain happen. Ooh, I'm not going to be able to do this. Ooh, it's too much for me. Ooh. That projection, that is what causes the hurt and the pain. I don't know how many times this happened to you. I trod on a nail once, almost went right through my foot when I was in Thailand. And it never hurt. Never hurt at all. Until the fellow who was with me said, oh, that is terrible. And then it would start hurting awfully. I just always wanted to kick that mug. But I had a nail through my foot, so I couldn't. So, why do people do that? You make it hurt. The mind, that's what's really important. So anyway, a lot of the time it's that anxiety makes us tense up and that makes it hurt even more. So, how to overcome these things with, not just with toothaches, with other stuff you have to deal with. Can't go to sleep at night because you've done too much. Or you know, the bed is a bit hard or it's too cold or you don't know what's going to happen next. All these things which keep you awake at night, pain in the body, pain in the head, it's just so easy to deal with. Pain in the body. I like telling the stories in public talks because I can make the talk interesting by making it a little bit so people can never fall asleep. So, this was the time when I had food poisoning. In my cave, which you're able to visit. When are you visiting the cave over there? PJ? After lunch, you can go into the cave. But be careful. There's a pathological panda in that cave. Because how where that panda came from is because every year on my birthday, people do like an auction, and they ransack my cave and my room. Anything which is remotely valuable or useful or interesting, they take an auction off. So my sitting meditation cushion was taken and auctioned off, so I didn't have anything to sit on. So somebody gave me this panda cushion. I know, it's really comfortable. That's what I meditate on, the little panda in there. Now that panda cushion used to be round. But after 3 months, it's really flat now. I don't know why. I'll be sitting on that. It's a really nice little cushion. But anyway, that was I had food poisoning. Now, that's why that sometimes, you know, if I go to Singapore, please look after my tummy or into England. Because, you know, you do have a sensitive stomach. It's just because of eating all those frogs and ants and ant eggs and water buffalo after birth, and all sorts of other stuff, rotten fish. But all that sort of stuff, you know, you're very tough at the time, you can eat anything. But after a while, it takes a toll on you. And so, that you try to eat what's good and what's correct for your tummy, but every now and again you make a mistake. You don't know what they put in the food. You just trust everybody. You know, when I get a bit sort of more senior, we have to have food tasters. Like they did in the Kings and Queens of England or something. But anyway, I had food poisoning in my cave. I was sitting in there. Ah! Oh! Ah! That's what I say. If you ever give public talk, don't just sit there and say, Four Noble Truths of this, the Eightfold Path, the Four. You make it dramatic and then people remember it. It's skillful means. So I was keep people awake. And the people want to come as well. So there I was, really struggling with my food poisoning. And of course, you think, why don't you go and ring the doctor, get an ambulance or something? That's what any sensible person would do. But monks, sometimes that they're not sensible, they're much wiser than that. So decided, no, come on, let's try something interesting. Because usually, you know, by the time they, if you do, you know, how can you get down to the phone? You know, she's over in the office by the time you call down. Now, there'll be somebody on there. You're not going to go, no, I'm busy, sorry. I've only got one phone, so if it gets if it gets tied up, we're in trouble. So anyway, but if you do get through, then you get all the details and stuff. And so it's really hard. So, decided, oh, come on, you can deal with this yourself. So, what I did. I remember, like, angry eating monsters. Had this terrible pain in the guts. Ah, ooh. You know, it's just reflex. You can't stop the ahs and the oohs. And I'm glad I did that, because it makes the anecdote much more interesting. And so, you, instead of trying to escape from your troubles and difficulties and pain, instead of trying to escape, which is what most people do, try and get rid of it, you want to let it be. Let go of trying to control it and get rid of it. Go into it instead of going away from it. That's called mindfulness. So it's the first thing, to be mindful of something which was very intolerable. Just be with it. And then the extra ingredient was kindness. You are mindful of it and kind to it, and you notice that every time you are kind to it, it just relaxed a little bit. The pain was noticeably a little bit less, only a tiny bit less. But you can notice that because you were mindful. And you realized that it was being ameliorated. It gave you some encouragement to carry on. And so the next time, a big contraction in the guts came up, a spasm, and just be with it, kind to it, and relax even more. So the pain was a little bit less, and a little bit less, and a little bit less. I forget, 20 minutes or 40 minutes is one of those two, but it wasn't that long. And after that, the pain had totally gone. And I was absolutely healthy. If I'd have called an ambulance, we wouldn't have got to the hospital by that time. But you could just do it yourself just by relaxing the body. Now what that taught me, and I encourage other people to do this, is if you have an ache, a pain, a stitch or whatever in your body, don't try and get rid of it. It's a wonderful meditation object on which you can practice mindfulness and kindness. It's amazing how well it works. Yeah, if you've got an ache in the knee and you can just move, fine. You know, if you've got a pain because, you know, you've got your hand in the fire, take it out straight away. Don't be stupid. But there are many aches and pains which, whatever way you move your body, this way and that way or whatever, is still there. So, we be with that. Mindful of it. And we have this wonderful kindness to it. Like the monster in the Emperor's Palace. Thank you for visiting me. Indigestion. Thank you for visiting me. And you're so welcoming and kind that your mindfulness gives you the feedback. You're not just mindful in the moment, you mindfully see things, they do change. It either gets better or worse, it very rarely stays the same. If it gets less painful, why? Whatever it was you did, that is called kindness, compassion, letting be, open the door of your heart. That, all those words point to the same movement of the mind, the same attitude. That is what relaxes the body. And you feel it. So if you've got an ache or pain now, we've all got some aches and pains, you've got a cough. So what you do, you look at the cough. You don't try and get rid of it. You feel it and you're kind to it. Poor old throat. Anything I can do for you, cough? And then you find it relaxes. You try and stop the cough. You really try and restrain it, control it. Of course it gets worse. And even colds. I had the sniffles, I remember in Korea. There's a good reason for that. Minus 15 degrees. Was it minus 25? No, minus 15 degrees centigrade outside. Snow everywhere. And so I had the sniffles. And I had to go on TV. Half an hour. Have you ever seen someone going on TV? And they're starting to... My name is Adam. Pooh! And then the microphone falls off. You can't do things like that on live TV. So, what you did do is you practice your kindness. Poor old nose. I'm not going to try and stop you, I'm just going to relax you to the max. Not afraid. In this moment, being kind to my sinuses. It works. So you go out there and just... No coughing, no sneezing, give a nice interview. That's not a psychic power, there's nothing magical, that's quite normal. You're practicing letting go and kindness on your body. So those people with irritable bowel syndrome, just feel it. Don't try and get rid of it, be kind to it. Open the door of your heart to that feeling. Yeah, you'll make mistakes, it'll get worse, just because you're not being kind. You're not really being mindful, you're trying to get rid of things. You're not letting it be. If it really is letting be, in other words, let this feeling be, let go of controlling, everything just relaxes. Like anyone with insomnia, you can't go to sleep at night, you're laying in your bed, just let it be. Don't try and control it. I often say your bed is one of the most comfortable places in the whole of this retreat. You can lay down there, it's warm, it's soft, you get used to the pillow, you can snuggle up to your pillow. You can stretch out. Oh, that's so nice. Why do you want to fall asleep into unconsciousness and waste that pleasure? As monks know, we don't get that much pleasure, but that's one of the great ones. Stretching out in your bed, oh, that feels nice. So don't go to sleep, you're wasting it. Go to sleep during one of my talks. You've heard all these stories before anyway. So, this is when you change your attitude. You let go of controlling your kind. You open the door of your heart to this. And then you find you just go to sleep. When you try to go to sleep, of course you can't. You try. When you're afraid, oh, if I don't go to sleep, I'm going to get sick. I'm going to just be terrible in the morning when I give a talk. Ah, what we're going to do? Ah. So fear causes control, which causes so much of the mental and physical turmoil in human beings. That's why I said in the first evening, there's nothing wrong with being sick, nothing wrong with being grumpy, nothing wrong with being irritable. It's part of nature. So let it be. Stop trying to control. Stop trying to play a role. And then everything relaxes. You let go, let it be. Much easier. And sometimes I hardly got any privacy at all. sometimes, people see me all the time. So it must be terrible if you're trying to act being an enlightened monk. I'm the enlightened monk, so I'm going to sit perfectly straight. I only speak Dharma, no jokes. Never let one come over. My rope has to be up here. I've got to look the part. And that must be so stressful. So you know, I'm not like that. You see me in public and private, just the same. Just the same stupid as I am. You can put a TV camera in my room and just still the same. So, you probably have already, I don't know. I don't care. Hidden one in the cave. Recording. What's it called? That panda's probably got a microphone inside or something. See what I really say when I'm by myself. No, it doesn't matter. So, what you have is you learn how to let things be. Mindful and kindness. With your own body, you can relax it. And that's one of the reasons, those of you who see me do guided meditations, start off getting your body nice and relaxed, on a chair, on a cushion, leaning against the wall is fine. So that you don't have to always sit on the floor, you don't have to sit on broken glass to be the tough guy. And once you're the tough guy, girls are as good as guys. If you're going to do that, I'm going to do that. If you're going to do that, I'm going to do it better. If you're going to sit for half an hour, I'm going to sit for 45 minutes. If you sit for 45 minutes, I'm going to sit for an hour. If you're going to do an hour. Sometimes that's what happens when we used to have these bells and timetables. 9 o'clock we finish. 9:30. And there's always be a couple of people here. And I did that once. I remember a long, 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 long time ago, I think when I was a layperson. Okay, 9 o'clock, we're supposed to go to bed, but I'm going to carry on meditating. I'm going to be the last in the hall. And about 9:45, you open your eye. Damn it. Those two guys are still there, and she is as well. You wait for another 10 minutes, open your eye. Oh, one of them's gone, there's two more to go. And it's absolutely ridiculous and stupid what people do. When you die, go to bed. You're not trying to prove anything. Or like in the walking meditation path in there. Who could walk the slowest? It's crazy what people do. But anyway. So it's nothing like trying to control things or make things happen that way. Instead, we learn how to just sit where we're comfortable. Where you are comfortable. Don't look at anybody else. There's no, I should do this, I should do it another way. No, you just be comfortable. But please, we do have a limit. Please don't wheel your bed in here. I just lay down while you listen to the talks. You've got to stay there. Someone's going to do it sooner or later. Instead, be real comfortable, just so your body can relax. And then your body gets nice and relaxed and easy. And I do that. I do like a scan of my body just to make sure, is everything okay? You're meticulous. So you don't just, okay, let's watch the breath straight away. No, how are your legs? How's my bottom? People fidget their bottom a lot. One of the reasons is because they don't pay any attention to it. Especially when I was really, really young. I was so thin, so many bones. And I thought it was really unfair because all the senior monks, they had the best cushions. The junior monks, or the junior nuns, they had to sit on the hard concrete. And that was really unfair because all the junior monks, we just had all bones. All those senior monks, they already had their own cushions. It's called fat. So I sometimes say that in the dining hall up there. Sometimes we run out of cushions. So I said, anyone who's fat, please give the cushions to someone who's thin. You've got your own padding on your butt. So anyway, so you look after your body, make sure it's nice and comfortable. Oh, crikey, too many jokes, not enough Dhamma. You encourage me, don't you? It's not my fault. So anyway, you just relax the body. And when is any tightness or tension there. I like to actually look inside the body, you know, just the stomach. You've got a cough or you've got sinuses or some ache here and ache there. Just look at it and just focus in, zoom in on it. That's your mindfulness. I call it like zooming in, because, you know, people use Google these days, Google Maps or whatever. Zoom in on where the problem is. And then you get this beautiful kindness. Oh, I love you, Nee. You've given me hell, but I love you. Oh, you're so nice. I remember that story I said about my mother kissing my knee better. It took the pain away every time. First, you know, one of the first, probably was the first time I understood the power of kindness and unconditional love. Just, the problem goes, the pain goes. That's why that sometimes in hospitals, nurses should not be spending all their time taking temperatures and writing reports. Wonderful to have more time just to sit by the bedside, hold your hand, and just talk, show some kindness. That'd be so therapeutic. Anyway, so I'm kind to my knee if it's aching. And you find the pain lessens. It lessens and lessens and lessens and lessens until it just disappears. If it doesn't, you can move it, but there's some things inside you you can't do anything about. Where I really have some influence, say fun, but fun's the wrong word, some power, is when you do talks like this to in cancer groups. Cancer groups, they've got tumours here, there, in many places. What do? I say, look, for goodness sake, don't try and get rid of that tumour. Love it. It's a monster which has come into your palace. Get out of here, tumour, you don't belong. What happens? Gets bigger. This is not just light stuff, this is heavy teachings. And it works, it's powerful. That's why I keep getting invited back to the Cancer Wellness Association every year. They keep on changing their name, but it's the same mob. So anyway, you go inside and just scan your body. Many women, I think it's 1 in 3, will get breast cancer. I think that's about the average. That's a lot. So it's pretty scary. It's, you know, really serious stuff. When you're meditating, you scan your body. If you feel that something's unbalanced, don't give it a name. You know, this is, there's something not right here. Stay with it and give this beautiful kindness. Mindfulness and kindness, kindfulness. And you see that whatever sensation or feeling is, don't try and name it, that's just too difficult. Because we just don't have the names for these things. And just relax it, and relax it, be kind to it. Remember the monster in the Emperor's Palace simile. Until one more act of kindness, or whatever that feeling is, vanishes completely away. Many tumours which haven't even been detectable by the machines can be overcome. Mindfulness and kindness is incredibly powerful. But I say that because it gives you an incentive to do this seriously. This is not light stuff. It's important. Then it means that, yeah, you know, you think, well, you know, I've got this fantasy, I've got to think about, you know, what I'm going to do with this business arrangement when I go back, how I'm going to get a job, what should I do with my kids, with that. Yeah, I know, but when it's, you know, your life, it's much more important. So it gives a sense of importance to this practice of meditation. So, we can relax our body. And you know that sometimes you do this, and you relax your body so much. There's like, you know, I haven't been to a spa or massage, but you know, there was a couple of times when I've gone into a bath, a hot bath. Twice in the last 43 years, I've had a hot bath. And the last time was when we went up to Tiger's Nest in Bhutan. So I thought, you know, I'm going to really ache after this at my age. And so just afterwards, the hotel had a bath, so I lounged in the hot bath. It was really nice. Lounge in the bath, the legs are just meditating. Oh, this felt really nice. To relax all the muscles. But you know, meditation works much better than that. all the muscles just totally relaxed, feels really good, really loose, not tight at all. And that's sometimes the way my robe keeps falling off. I gave a talk in, it was actually in the Netherlands, to a business group many, many years ago. And afterwards, this executive came up to me and said, you know, I just noticed just your posture is really sloppy, how your robe keeps falling off. And I admire that, she said. Because she was brought up with Catholic nuns, always so tight, so bound up. You know, their robes, their habit, whatever it was so tight. And that's their personality, was the same. No looseness, no fun. It was just rules, and you've got to keep them or else. Yeah, you're so tight. And he said, as I dress, that's how I am. Loose, with little things falling off. Relaxed, nothing tight. Full of love and fat. So anyway, she had insight, that lady. So, you relax the body so much. And then it's so easy to meditate. No aches and pains to worry about. No itchy nose, no sort of whatever else you've got. So you're meditating. Yeah, but that's just for the body. What about for the mind? Sama sama. The same. That's Bahasa. The same. So, you look at your mind. Just like your body. It's got an ache here, a pain there. It's got a wound from the past. A fear of the future. You've been wounded. You've been damaged by what happened to you. So what do you do? Thank you. Trauma from the past. Thank you. Thank you, tumor of the future. So you look at those things. It was so much kindness. They start to vanish away. Just like the ache and pain in the body gets less and less and less. Just that memory from the past, which was traumatic, gets less and less and less and less. If it's kindness, it gets less. If it's control, fear, it gets worse. It's as simple as that. So it teaches you what kindness is. You learn what letting go is. Letting go of control. Letting be of whatever's here right now. That's the difference between letting go and letting be. And those are just words, but you learn what that actually refers to. Every time you let things be, it relaxes. Every time you let go, you're peaceful. But if you worry, of course that's not letting go. Think I'm going to, okay, from now on I'm going to let go. What do you mean? On, now is enough. So this is how we learn how to be peaceful. First with our body, then with our mind. I haven't said anything about breath meditation. Haven't said anything about nimittas or jhanas or insight or satipatthana, or have I? Watching the body. What's that called? The first satipatthana! First focus of mindfulness. Awareness of the body. And what are you supposed to do with the body? Yeah, you've got different ways of doing this, but every one of those is you watch the cause of things arising, cause of things passing away. Why do these things happen? And especially the next satipatthana, vedana. Why have you got pain? What causes pain, tension? What causes it to disappear? The causes and effects. Control makes it worse. Kindness makes it less. So you find you are aware of the physical feelings in the body. And then the mental feelings in the body. How to relax. What does relaxation feel like? Investigating a wonderful part of the Dhamma. And the Cittanupassana. The third Satipatthana. If you actually look at that, we'll come across that later on. And I'll remind you of what I said just now later on when we do this in the Word of the Buddha class or the Sutta class. There you find, you understand a mind which is distracted or contracted, a mind which is free. So, you understand the causes. What makes your mind peaceful? What makes it agitated? The causes of these things. And the cause comes, is taken away, and you're peaceful. So I've got so many burdens I have to deal with. So many responsibilities. So many people depending upon me. So do I appear stressed out? Some days I do. But there are times when I have wise irresponsibility. You let it go. So my motto is that if I don't work hard, everything will go wrong. When I do work hard, it goes wrong anyway. Either way, it goes wrong. So I decided to enjoy it before it goes wrong. In other words, why waste these moments? These moments of peace, worrying about something in the future, which was going to go wrong anyway. But I'll deal with that when it comes. It's a beautiful, positive attitude towards life. A lot of times when you relax and relax, it doesn't go wrong. It's amazing just that attitude, just how you've got this huge monastery over the road. Got this huge retreat center over here, huge nuns and monastery, and others coming up on the production line. I always said that Bodhinyana Monastery is a monk factory, that Dhammasara Nuns Monastery is a nun factory, and just like any good company, we franchise out. So Anukampa Bhikkhuni Monastery will be my franchise in UK. We've got Ajahn Brahm Society in Colombo, that's my franchise in Sri Lanka. We've got, well, maybe BF from Bodhinyana, that's my two competing franchise. Oh, Brahm Center, three franchises over in Singapore. I got the Bodhinyana International Foundation, that's, I don't know why they call it BIF, because that's what it means, BIF. BIF. Over in Hong Kong. So we're franchising. We always have to keep up with modern ways of doing things. And this is the Jhana Grove franchise for the lay men and lay women. So this is how we are changing the world. Franchising. Is that a good idea? I don't know. But anyway, just when you learn how to, it's amazing just when you learn how to be responsible, live in the moment, how successful it can become. We work hard to try and control, and it all goes wrong. We just let it evolve, nurture, guard, and everything tends to flourish. We'll learn that way when people said some of the best ecological diversity was found in the median strips in highways and motorways. And the reason was, even though it was very polluted air, that no one would actually walk on that part of a motorway. They'd leave it alone. And it would tend to grow and heal all by itself. It was just like when you had a wound. You know, you put sort of a bandage on it, leave it alone, it would heal. But you know, most people, they're just so fearful, they put a bandage on it. And 5 said, look it up, how's it going? Okay, fair enough. 2 minutes later, or maybe I'll put this ointment on and put it on there, close it up. You mess around with it, you don't allow it to heal. Same with your meditation. Just sit there and just do nothing. What if you fall asleep? What's wrong with falling asleep during meditation? Is that against your precepts? Is there the 9th precept? I refrain from falling asleep while I meditate. If you try not to fall asleep, you get so tense, you wear out, and you do fall asleep. Just relax and let go. Sitting here, just, oh, if I fall asleep, I fall asleep. And it used to happen to me. I used to have terrible sleepiness when I was meditating, until I figured out the causes of it. You know what the causes were? I was meditating in a jungle. It was hot. I grew up in London where it was cold. The climate wasn't conducive and it was humid. You know, it was cold and snowy in UK. I was malnourished. You know, used to frog on rice, there's only one frog, and even the frog was malnourished, the one we ate. So, you know, it was lost both ways. So malnourished, what else was there? Oh, we were sleep deprived, because Ajahn Chah's only sleep 4 hours, or 4.5, I was supposed to be 4 hours, but I could never get it below 4.5. I used to catch up doing his talks. So, sleep deprived, malnourished, hot climate. And I remember going to Bangkok once to do visas and staying in Wat Pho Wan, which had the wealthiest monastery probably in Bangkok at the time. This was the king's monastery. That's where the king used to go. And that they had an air-conditioned room. And of course, you know, it was used by all the study monks for most of the day, but we said, well, look, we get up early in the morning, 3 o'clock, can we use it then? So, you know, no one uses it at that time, you can have the key. So from 3 to before Armstrong, 5 o'clock, we meditated in air-conditioned room. No sleepiness at all for me. Same with all the other monks. It was just so easy to meditate, because the climate was just right for us. And of course, we were eating much better food in Bangkok than yet in the northeast, which was, you know, poverty stricken. And we weren't sort of, you know, because Ajahn Chah wasn't there and there was no bells, we can sleep whenever we wanted. So I realized from that there was nothing wrong with me. It wasn't my fault that I was sleepy. It's not your fault, it's just causes and conditions, that's all. Tiredness, exhaustion, mental and physical. So that's why, for the first few days, in any retreat, your bedrooms are there, your pillows, they miss you. They're longing for your head. So if you need to take a break, take a rest, you feel much better afterwards. And you know, a lot of times people are grumpy. They're angry, they're in a bad mood. You know why? They're tired, that's all. Nearly 90% of the divorces in our society would be stopped if people get a good night's sleep. That's what I reckon. Of course you're grumpy when you wake up in the morning, you haven't had a good night's sleep, you haven't rested properly. Of course you get sick because you haven't slept well. So that's one of the big problems. So now you have your chance to catch up on your beauty sleep. Not just beauty in the body. For some of us, it's way too late for that. You're too old. But at least you have a beautiful mind, relaxed and peaceful. And mine's more beautiful. You know, when I was young, not many people took photographs of me. I can't believe it. Now I'm old. Lots of people take photographs of me. When I was young, I used to give the flowers to my girlfriends. And now people give flowers to me. It's karma. So, you know, what you give to others, you actually get back afterwards. In your old age, you get given that. Anyway, it's a crazy life. But anyway, you're at peace with it. So when you really relax the mind, whatever the mind is, you're at peace with it. You don't fight it. And you find if you love your sleepiness, the door of my heart's open to your sleepiness. You find it doesn't last. You fight it. You feel ashamed of it. You feel, I've been meditating for so long, I shouldn't be sleepy anymore. That's when it gets worse and it lasts much longer. If you're sleepy, it's nothing to do with me. It's none of my business. So you feel sleepy. And then little by little you wake up. When I used to fight my sleepiness, sometimes I used willpower. And after the sleepiness went, I had restlessness. so restless, thinking about this, thinking about that, so on. Calm down, and you fall asleep again. It was like a pendulum between the two extremes of sleepiness and restlessness, until you learn how to find that middle. There's sleepiness, let it be. Restlessness, let it be. And after a while, everything became peaceful. If you make peace with your sleepiness, you're making peace, you're making peace, you're making peace, you get peace. Peace is like a house made of bricks. Many, many bricks laid one after the other, and then you have your house of peace. You can't make a house of peace by anger, by war. It's karma. You can't make a beautiful mind out of anger and war. Get out! I don't want you. I want this. I want that. Then there's no kindness in your mind. You build up kindness drop by drop, smile by smile, and this beautiful gentleness, so your body feels so nice. Make peace, be kind, be gentle. Good meditation karma, no matter what you're experiencing. And then you find the body relaxes. You find the mind relaxes with it. And as I said, the mind is not afraid of you anymore. Never wants to run away from you. Who wants to run away from a good friend? Someone who's kind. Someone who's really negative and fearful and scary and really makes you can't get out of the room fast enough. Nice little story. One of my favourite monks, many have heard this many times, but it just comes up. I indulge in these beautiful memories. Things which taught me, not through words, but just by the demeanour. Was one of my favourite monks, Ajahn Tate, Northeast Thailand. Went to go and see him with all my questions. Many, many questions I wanted to ask this great monk. But soon as came into his presence, into the room, every question just evaporated. What do I want to ask questions for? When you felt so much peace and kindness and love from this small, simple old monk. And the only thought which I did have, I remember this thought, crazy thought came up, right, I'm not leaving. They're going to have to drag me out of this room with elephants. And I'm going to resist like hell. You've got this beautiful sense of acceptance and peace. I was a very stupid monk. I had all sorts of crazy ideas and stuff. But it didn't matter. Just this beautiful acceptance. He was not going to criticize me, he wasn't going to harm me. He felt so much peace and happiness and safety that I just relaxed so much, didn't need any more questions. That was the answer. Be so kind to yourself, you feel safe, you don't need anything else. You don't have to improve, you don't have to be anything you're not. You're just totally at peace, calm, free. I don't think he even said anything. He probably thought I was a crazy Westerner just waiting all that time to come in there and just nothing to say. Because the peasants gave me the answer. So that's how to meditate. Nice and peaceful. So easy. So easy when you stop doing stuff. So that's how we let go. Easy. So can you let me go now? It's 9 o'clock. Thank you very much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Don't just follow me, just do it different. I must do it different, then you're following me again. Okay, have a nice day. See you later. Please remember, any complaints, it's $10 a complaint, goes to charity. You can get, I forget, four complaints for $30.